No, most of...
Whoa.
That's a little loud. Yeah. Most folks, they'll start trickling back in. We had some that had to leave because of other engagements, and that's certainly okay. And hope everybody got enough to eat. Had plenty of food, good food. Thank you if you prepared something and brought it. Certainly appreciative of that. And that's one thing I know here at Cary. You're not going to go hungry. You go hungry, it's your fault, that's for sure. So, but thank you for doing that. And again, thank you for being here today. What I want to do now is just kind of open it up to, if you have questions or anything about what we talked about this morning concerning grief, or if you want to express something or something you've been through that you think will help people. If you ask a question, probably what I'll do is I'm going to repeat that question, because we are taping this and we have people that are also listening live right now, so I want to be able to repeat the question so they can hear it with what we're talking about. But if you want to express something, and I might kind of quickly summarize that back, especially for those that are listening live, can know and kind of participate. As I had a lot of people tell me they were traveling but really wanted to be able to listen, so we want to continue to include them in this. But so just let me open it up by asking you if you have any questions or comments or concerns or things you want to express or share. Certainly feel free to do that. Mr. Ozzie. So, you know, like Ozzy said, which is pretty common concerning grief, is many times, like I said in the beginning, we always attribute it to death. We think, well, that's the only way we're going to grieve. But when something becomes our identity, and that's really what grief is talking about, when something becomes so much of us and so much a part of us and who we are and what our identity is, you know, somebody who's been married for 60 years, and that spouse has been all that they've ever known and all that they've ever been around and all they've ever talked to. So, you know, like Ozzy was talking about in relation to having a job, and when I left, that was my identity and didn't realize I was grieving, because many times we don't realize perhaps how much that particular job might be ingrained in us. You know, I'll give you a common thing that happens to preachers sometimes. You know, let's say they leave a particular work. And they were successful in that work, and they develop a lot of relationships and people they love, and but they had to leave for whatever reason. Maybe it was a parent, or you know, or whatever the case might be. Many times you'll see the preacher calling back the old congregations, "How's everything going? Everything going okay there?" Because that was their identity for so many years and what they were used to. And it's not bad in and of itself, but it's a small portion of grief that begins to happen, because that congregation was who you are, and like Ozzy was talking about, that job was who he was, and when you left, was it on good terms? Your terms, okay. So what is it that you think later that helped you? Do you think it was the job perhaps you're doing now, or whatever job came after that, that you began to establish and become something perhaps more, or going through that process? Was there anything you saw that helped you kind of look back and go, well, you know, I don't need that job anymore? Right, okay. Okay. Sure, yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. 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 So do you think now, as you look over it now and understanding that that was grief, do you think anything looking back has affected you now, maybe in a negative way, or has affected relationships or anything you think you could say maybe that was attributed to this particular situation? Okay, gotcha. Now, that's understandable. That's understandable. It's processing it still. Sure. There's a lot to process, right? Sure. Yeah. And sometimes as you begin to put the puzzle pieces together from that time frame and processing that, you begin to put them together and see, I see how that affected this now. And so sometimes it opens us up in a good way because it can help us see things clearly in another area or another aspect. But I certainly, you know, good point. Yes, sir. Sure. You know, I think certainly with illness in relation to, again, understanding that grief has so many faces to it. And like you said, so with you being the illness, and believe me, I understand migraines. You don't take migraines lightly if you've had a migraine. And certainly never to your extent, but I can sympathize in having had them, how debilitating they can be. And then where it goes through the process where it's, like you said, you know, years or whatever it was, that it keeps you from being who you are. So again, there's an identity process going through that. And like I think with, and this is where, you know, I talked about those stages being different, because in sickness you might have where you're angry and you're resentful over the migraine because it's taken away your mobility and your job, and then you have that ray of hope, that sunshine comes through and you're thinking, hey, maybe it's going to look up again and things are getting better. Then the next day you're knocked back down again. So it's sometimes in illnesses, and I've heard cancer patients say this too, it's like teetering between hope and despair. Back and forth, hope and despair. There's a hopeful day, there's a day of disparity. There's a hopeful day, so again, it's processing it and going through it and how you look at it and how you begin to handle that grief, and what was it that kind of brought you through as those began to go away? Do you feel you were still in a grieving process as you came out of that illness? Mm-hmm. 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 Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that goes to the idea certainly of what love is. And, you know, we feel the pain of those that we love the most, not necessarily the same way, but we feel a form of pain that they're going through because their pain becomes our pain. It hurts us to see them hurting and vice versa. So certainly that grief can be transferred to someone else because they don't want you to be in pain. And perhaps that guilt is then transferred to them because they feel guilty because they can't do anything to fix it. So it can kind of become a revolving door. And with that, you know, some people kind of dive into their illness and they don't want to fix it. I'll give you a story here in just a minute after Lori gives her point, but in relation to someone then who begins to accept an illness too that knows they aren't going to get better, and how they begin to process that because they don't want the grief to debilitate them in their last moments of life. Go ahead. Sometimes, and you bring up an excellent point, because sometimes in grief, you go through any particular stage that you're dealing with at that moment becomes a state of existence. Because in that, you might have so many extenuating circumstances of responsibilities, whether it's a job, maybe you have small children at home that have to be taken care of, and you don't have time to sit there and cry on the couch because, you know, kids have to go to school and they have to be fed and the bills have to be paid, and life continues to go on. But through that process, you're not grieving. You're simply existing. And then when all of those, you know, outward kind of circumstances go away, and it might be years that you finally sit down and now you begin to go through your process of grieving, because sometimes you don't have a chance to. And it's not because you don't want to, but because you can't, because you have so many things and so many responsibilities that need to be taken care of, you're not concerned about yourself. Sometimes that becomes extremely unhealthy. If you're not careful, because it will affect your health. Sometimes too, and I didn't mention this is really another stage, but it's more rare than it is common, I guess, but is physical illness related to grief. And sometimes people get in such a state of despair in that grief that they become physically sick, and it becomes physically debilitating, whether it's, you know, I've heard of individuals like Don's talking about that get migraines that are debilitating because of, you know, the emotional stress that they're going through, or it affects them physically to where they don't want to get out and do anything, and, you know, or they're sick to their stomach, or there's so many ailments that's interesting when it comes to the human body that stress can cause. You know, I can tell you firsthand, I had to stay in the hospital overnight because of stress one time. You just work yourself to the bone, so to speak. But the same thing with grief. We become so stressed out that it physically debilitates us from doing anything. And one of those things I was going to talk about is you have to be aware of those signs of those that you love to make sure that it's not affecting them to the point that they're going to need professional help. And sometimes people need professional help. And that's not a bad thing. It's really not. But most people aren't going to admit that. They're not going to tell you that. And you have to kind of keep an eye out for those things. But, you know, I think Lori makes an excellent point with, you know, existing in grief. And sometimes, like Ozzy, just finally finding out that he was grieving. And now he's got to process it and go back years and kind of pull it apart, like Lori said, and figure it out, okay, and now I need to grieve and get through this, because this really did affect me. So those were excellent points. When I was at Fayette, I'll try not to get emotional, but when I was at Fayette, our secretary, Miss Linda, wonderful lady, she was like a mother to me. And anyway, she developed throat cancer and went through a bout, and she beat it, and wonderful thing, and then finally it came back, and the radiation and the chemicals just really did a toll on her and beat up her body. And she got to the point after, you know, through the chemical burns and the scars, she got to the point when it came back full blown, she said, "I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore." She said, I want to live out the last few, you know, weeks of my life. I want to enjoy my family. I want to spend time with my loved ones. She was very private and very closed off. She didn't want anybody to see her in that condition except her son, except her three sons, her grandchildren, and her husband. And that was, I had to respect that. As much as I wanted to be there for her, in her grief and her process of accepting what was going to come, she was going through a process of grief. Because now you're accepting the fact that I can't do anything else to fix what's wrong with me. But she got to the point, which was encouraging to us, that she said, I believe in who I am as a Christian. I trust my Lord and where I'm going to be. I've served Him faithfully as much as I can. I'm going to allow the Lord to bless me with the last few days on this earth that I have and enjoy my family." And she died in hospice. But through that process, one of the things I remember in talking with her husband, Dennis, wonderful man, was that allowed him in that process was to talk about memories and go through a small grieving process before she even died. So when you talk about illness, and many times when people begin to become sick and facing the fact perhaps they're not going to get through this, or maybe this is now a way of life for me, can be an extreme amount of stress, and it is a grieving process. Because if your identity with who you used to be is no longer who you were, and you can no longer be the person you want to be, and you're taking away, as we talked about, your identity, that how do I become someone else that I don't know how to be, because this is who I've always wanted to be and who I've always been? You know, I can tell you, and I kind of say this jokingly, when I hurt my foot, I realized I wasn't 20 anymore. And that bothered me for a little bit. Believe it or not, I grieved, because it was at the first time I really realized I'm not as young as I used to be. And that kind of hurts, you know, because you want to be active and you want to do the things that you could do at that age, but now that's taken away and you're like, well, okay, now I just got to come to the fact that I'm getting old and it's part of life and I have to accept this new stage. So go ahead. What's that? Yeah, I can understand that. Go ahead, Ozzy.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Exactly, yeah. And again, it's a small form of grief. You know, I can remember one particular instance with Larissa's grandfather. When he got to the point where he couldn't drive, and it was comical in a way, because the siblings had to decide who was going to take away his driver's license. And none of them wanted to do it. And so they were pointing to the grandkids, and the grandkids said, uh-uh, that's y'all's responsibility. But again, they understood, because that was such a part of who he was, because he visited. He was an elder in the church, and that was his identity. To take that away was going to devastate him. And so it wasn't an easy process to go through, but it was something that they had to do. I think you were first, and then I'll get you. Go ahead. Okay. So really what's happening, many times we don't always recognize when we move forward into the next phase. Yeah, I'm sorry, he's reminded me, you know, the question was, she feels like she's missed a few of those phases, and that she feels like maybe she hasn't gone to the next phase, and maybe she's missing something out to help her process the grief. Well, in that, if you remember what I said from the onset of this, was not everybody goes through every stage the same way. Some people process those stages differently, and some people never experience that particular stage. And that's not a bad thing. But in your case, where you're saying you feel like there's something missing, you're still in your particular stage at this moment in what you're going through, in processing through. Like you said, you're functioning and you're active and doing all of those things, but there's something that you're looking for in the grief process to push you to the next phase. In that, that's only something you can find. That's that journey that I was talking about, of the road that you walk, of finding what is going to help you kind of get into the next stage. You know, is it that you haven't asked the question, you know, why did this happen? Is it understanding fully what happened with your mother's death? Is it that you didn't, you know, understand the circumstances around it? You know, whatever the case was, in looking back and kind of processing, you can, like you said, you've gone through these stages, but what stage is it that you feel like you haven't gone through that you need to go through? Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and sometimes in that, and I think in the stage that you're in that anger and resentment, but you're questioning because you feel, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the answers will help you move forward. You know, what is it that kind of caused this, and why did this happen? And, you know, was there foul play or whatever is kind of in there? Because you seem to be lingering on the questions, and you're angry at why you don't have those questions yet, and why those are still there. So again, you know, every day to you perhaps could be, is that now I'm saying to myself, every day I get up, that question is still there. Why did this happen? And again, it kind of goes back somewhat to guilt in a little bit of a way. Do you feel guilty at all because that question's not answered? Is there anything that you could have done? I'm just asking you, you know, and you can, you know, correct me, say no if those aren't the situations. Like I said, you know, sometimes the best way for us to grieve with anger and resentment is to express the emotion. And that, you know, and I'm sure you and your sister have had many conversations and expressed those, that emotion and that anger and that resentment towards whatever the situation is. And sometimes, you know, we can't help external circumstances. We can't control those things in life. But sometimes because of those external circumstances, they affect how we grieve because we don't fully come to an understanding of why they happened. And so as you go through that, you know, obviously, like you said, and you're very honest, and I appreciate that you're angry. You know, you're upset because you're not getting the answers you want. This is not helping you understand. Now here's the year anniversary of your mother and understanding this. Right. And remember I said some too, you know, grief can be a lengthy process. It really can, you know. But, you know, you're kind of going through that, but I appreciate, you know, what you share there. Yes, ma'am. Sure. Yeah. Right. You know, and I think with that, you know, I think you said the best thing in relation to kind of expressing it for folks who are listening is, one, the fear of the unknown of not knowing what's going to happen, but two, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said it's accepting reality now. Because for so long you wouldn't accept it, and a lot of times, like I said, grief is a scary thing. So your faith cannot fix what you won't face. So your faith in the Lord when you finally said, hey, I have to accept this now because it's not going away. Maybe it's not going to get better. We can pray that it's going to get better and pray for, you know, some medical thing to happen. But if it doesn't get better, we have to accept reality of what it is and begin to go through this process because reality is reality. And I think, like I mentioned previously in the beginning portion, was in stepping out and affirming reality is to understand I have to get back to some normalcy of life. and kind of pushing myself past my comfort zone to establish new relationships. And I think that's what you're doing at the Senior Center there and trying to help people. And with that, I'm just guessing here, it's probably helping you at the same time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, certainly. Sure, yeah, absolutely. Yes, ma'am. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. What you said basically in looking at is life is full of little griefs along the way. And how you handle the little griefs will really show how you're going to handle the large griefs when they come. You know, perhaps of losing, you know, a portion of your health that you once had and you're not as mobile as you used to be, and now you're confined to a wheelchair, or you're using a cane now, or whatever the case was. Those little steps along the way and how you process those little bitty griefs, and I'm not saying those griefs aren't important. But what I'm saying is sometimes we don't even see them as grieving because we're dealing with them on a daily basis. Well, okay, you know, I can't be as active as I once could, but now I'm going to get on a bike because I can't run like I used to, and I can do that, so now I've overcome this grief, and now I've got to go into this next phase of life, and how am I going to deal with this now? And I'm not as spry as I used to be. So all of those little griefs, like you said, can build up, and even, you know, a couple at church, and your identity is gone, and the person that you were always with and who you're known of, you know, because they say, there's Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. Well, now it's just Mrs. So-and-so. And so your identity is no longer what you once knew it to be. And sometimes that's really hard for people to kind of... Right, yeah. And again, that's, you know, that goes through the coping process and accepting those things. But I think you were next, then I'll, you know, take you. Go ahead. Children grieve much differently than we do, because like you said, you made a good point. Children can't comprehend a lot of adult situations because they haven't had the life experience to process those. But children in their own way do grieve. And one of the things I always suggest for people in talking to children, and I do this if a parent has died or if a grandparent has died. We don't want to take Johnny to the funeral home. That's exactly where he needs to be. You cannot hide death from a child, and you cannot hide grief from a child, because in their own way, they're feeling it. They might not express it to you, but that grief is certainly internal, and it's going to be there. If it continues to be bottled up, and you bring up a good point, if it's not expressed, it can be debilitating later and cause other problems. One of the things with children is, and there's different therapies to be used. I mean, there's a lot. It all depends on the makeup of the child. But one of the greatest ways is to get a child talking. And allowing them to express things, even when it's an adult conversation and you think, wow, you know, he seems to be a little bit old to be talking about divorce. He's only 7 years old. Let him express how he feels and what's bothering him. You know, I'm mad at Daddy. Well, why are you mad at Daddy? You know, what is it that's causing this anger? Because they have to get that out as well, too. Because if that resentment continues to stay, and I'm haven't counseled a lot of children. A lot of this is what I've read and you know and been in classes with is sometimes that anger and resentment can cause problems later in life with relationships, with job performance, with who they are in society, because all of those things become internal. Like you talked about holding them in, until those things are let out and expressed, they can become debilitating to the fact being physically enabling, but also emotionally enabling, and affecting who they can become as people. You know, so. But I think the biggest thing is just talking to them. Mm-hmm. Okay. It could be that you have some resentment there, and it sounds like you have some resentment there towards her. And whatever that internal resentment is, obviously it could be because she left. You know, there's probably more to that. But, you know, like I said, sometimes in understanding what we're going through in relation to personal problems is that we have to address the problem. And sometimes we just don't want to do that because it brings up so many painful memories. And again, there's the grieving process. And I don't want to face this, and this has been buried for 20, 30 years. I've dealt with it fine. I'm functional in every aspect of the word, but then there's the moment where I begin to think, you know, I really wish I had the relationship. Why did she leave? Why did she do this? And so the questions begin to come, and we begin to ask ourselves. And so again, I always suggest to people, if you can, is to address the problem that you're having, you know, with the person. And it could be just a simple question of why. You know, and sometimes, but also tell people too, be prepared for the answer, because sometimes we're not prepared for what we hear. You know, whatever the case might be for her leaving, you have to be prepared to hear why she left. So, does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And, you know, I think you make another excellent point along with the fear. And you said now, just 10 years later, again, everybody processes grief differently and length differently. And just because one person might be stuck in a particular phase or stage of grief doesn't mean they're not progressing through grief, because some stages take longer than others. And I've seen some people where 2 days after the funeral, they've cleaned the closet out and they're moving on with life. And they've had their 2 days, they've done their processing, they've done their crying, their anger. They said the best way for me to move on is not that I'm forgetting, but let's remove these external things that are going to affect who I am and how I'm trying to move forward. I'm going to carry his memory with me, but life's got to go on. Some people can't do that because they're extremely afraid of what the next step is. Mm-hmm. Right. Like you were. Sure, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. And sure. Sure. Mm-hmm. And was she a family friend? Okay, so was she close to your husband? So, you know, and sure. Yeah. I think in that you might be able to use that to your advantage in relation to helping her grieve and helping you grieve and to talk about it. And don't be afraid to talk about him around her and say, no, I'm not torturing myself. I'm remembering because I love him. And I want people to remember him too. And you remember him and you loved him. So, and I know you have funny stories. So it's okay. You know, so in that, you can help her. Because I think it wouldn't surprise me if she doesn't feel your pain too. You know, so, you know, And sometimes in our grief, we can help other people who might not obviously experience our grief because they were a loved one, or maybe they were a close external friend or coworker who misses them as well too. But sometimes, you know, I've had this where, you know, a friend has passed away. I didn't want to express any grief because I felt guilty because I didn't think it was my place. You know, this is their loved one, and that's their close family, and I don't really have a right to grieve, but I do have a right to grieve. I might do it not in the way that they're doing to take away from what they're going through, but at the same time that I can grieve the loss of the person I loved and then share those memories with them of who I knew him to be. And that's a good thing. Again, that comes with expressing emotion. Yes, sir. And again, that's, you know, you're talking about taking things out of the closet because that was your way of progressing, where some people might keep those forever because that's how they want to remember them. And, you know, and either way is not bad, because again, there's the individuality of the grief, and that you said would help me. It's not that you're forgetting. It's not that it was any less to you. But those things, obviously, it's not that those things were important to you because she was important to you. And the memory of her was important, where some people, you know, like I talked about Miss Jan, she cherished those tapes of Brother Don McWhorter. I mean, she wouldn't even let her kids have them. She said, you know, these are mine. And I mean, they had recordings of him, but she had her personal collection of her favorite sermons that she liked to listen to every night that she would put on, and she wasn't going to part with those things. She gave away his library to younger preachers because she wanted, you know, those preachers to have access to those things and his notes. But she said, I don't need those things, but I need his shirt, I need his cologne, and I need his tapes. And she held on to those until the day that she died. You know, again, it's an individual thing. And like you said, and certainly thank you for sharing that, that's what helped you progress to the next thing, to move forward, even if it was, you know, just a week or so later. Yes, sir. I think it can be. I think they can correlate to each other, and I think they can be individual symptoms as well too. You know, we can, you know, be sad over losing our dog or something, but at the same time, you might grieve the loss of your dog because you had him for, we had a dog for 17, 18 years, and you know the boys bawled like I died, you know, and I'm thinking, well, hope they'd cry that much when I pass away. You know, but again, it's I think it depends on the state of the individual, because I think with grief comes sadness. But I think also that we can be sad at, you know, I'm really sad and bummed because my boss retired and I'm really going to miss him because he was such a great boss. It might necessarily be grief because I can move forward and everything's fine and go home and laugh, but I'm still sad over the situation. So I think they can be, you know, parallel, and I think, you know, at the same time they can be different too. So good question though. Go ahead. I think Leslie's next, then I'll get you, Ken. Sure. Yeah. Now, Daryl was saying, you know, is there a difference between grief and sadness? Because, you know, at one point they seem to go hand in hand, and at the other point sometimes it seems, well, I'm sad over the fact that, you know, Leslie's not going to be at church on Sunday, and I miss Leslie, and I'm kind of sad he's not here, but I understand he's got other things he's got to do for work, and he couldn't help it, or whatever the case was. So, but at the same time, we can be extremely sad in grief because sadness is an emotion. You know, and it's an emotion that we express. I think they're expressed differently. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And, sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think, you know, like I said, I think emotions are individual. They're very individual in how we express those. And, you know, I think sadness can be a state of despair. Sadness, you can have a happy sad. You know, we were talking about at lunch over sometimes funerals can actually be a happy funeral. You're sad, but at the same time you're laughing because you're remembering the person. So there's a different form of emotion in that sadness based upon the situation. Let me get Hannah real quick. She's had her hand up and I passed her over a couple times. I'm sorry. Go ahead. In losing friends, you know, yes and no. And let me say it to preface it with this, is that sometimes people separate themselves from us because they don't know how to handle us. They don't know how to approach us. They don't want to offend us. They don't want to step on our toes. They're afraid to talk about it because they don't know how. And that's why I'm going to mention a few things, but in how we talk to people who are grieving. But sometimes people will separate themselves in such a way that's wrong because they just don't want to deal with it. You know what? This isn't my problem, and I don't want to handle it. And that's unfortunate because in those moments of our grief and weakness is when we need our friends the most to just sit there. And, you know, certainly it's sad that it happens because people ask, you know, you don't come around me anymore. I don't know how to talk to you. Talk to me like you've always talked to me. Don't treat me any different. So, but I'm sure it was hard, absolutely. Go ahead. And again, sometimes, like, you know, sometimes people don't know how to approach us. Ken, go ahead. Sure, absolutely. Right. Sure. I heard a preacher say one time, and I'll never forget this, an old gospel preacher say, funerals are for us, not for the dead. You know, we're there to remember ourselves, that person. And, you know, Ken makes the excellent point, everybody wants to remember in different ways, and sometimes things are done traditionally because that's the way things have always been done. You know, being from South Louisiana and where most of my family is, and if you've ever seen a funeral in New Orleans, they throw a funeral in New Orleans. On the way, it's sad, but on the way back, you know, and of course, it's not always in a scriptural way, but that's just the way they express themselves because they want to remember the person of who they were in a good light. They want to celebrate their life and to remember and laugh. And Ken and I were talking about this at lunch. I remember there was a funeral that I went to in Fayette where the man died and he was cremated, and they didn't do his memorial service for several weeks because they were waiting for friends and family to be able to come in. And they'd asked me to say just a few short words because I really didn't know him that well. So he wanted an invitation given. So, you know, I did that. But afterwards, several people got up that they had in line that he worked with, that his kids got up, and they just told stories and jokes about it. And I've never seen a funeral home laughing so hard than after that particular service. And they were walking out holding hands and laughing and carrying on because he wanted people to remember him for his vivacious, his attitude and his life. And he was a big joker and always playing practical jokes on people. So that's how he wanted to be remembered. I certainly think that's a good thing to do because I think it can help us grieve in a way to remember the person. But then, you know, what about, and kind of to flip the coin over, sometimes it's not always the best of circumstances concerning the funeral because that's not what the person wants. They might have been a Christian. And, you know, I can remember Sister Linda's funeral. She was very specific on what she wanted. I mean, to the point she told us almost what to say. And she said it better not go over 30 minutes. Because I knew Miss Linda, I kept it at 25. But she wanted it planned. This is what she wanted. This is how she wanted everything done. So I think, you know, certainly we should rejoice. This person's in heaven especially. But I think a lot of it is collectively, like you said, hey, let's throw a luau. You know, remember me for who I am. That's what I love. I think it's okay is what I think Ken's trying to say. It's okay for us to laugh. It's okay for us to cry and remember and enjoy the conversations and people telling funny stories. And, you know, sometimes those are the best moments of the good memories that you want to take with you, not what they were battling or whatever the case might be. So, but it's okay if you tell your kids, hey, you make sure you're living it up at the funeral. There's no crying, or this is what I want, and you go back and then have some fried chicken and mashed potatoes and call it a night. You know, I mean, it's individualized, but it's okay to laugh and celebrate a person's life too, because I mean, you know, the best funerals I do are of Christians. You know, because you know where they're going. You know the life they lived and that they celebrated. And, you know, I've told you the story of the funeral I did for Miss Zula Witherington. You know, all of her family was Christians. And I remember all of them collectively talking about, because of her life and how she lived, they were Christians now and passing that on to their children. And, I mean, that was an extremely happy moment in that funeral for me. It helped me because that was the first funeral I ever did. But also at the same time, in remembering her and the type of influence that she carried to so many people and how they celebrated her life as a Christian. So I think it's a good thing. But again, it goes down to individuality as well. And some people are that way. Like you said, some people are very stoic, and that's what they want. So I heard a friend of mine say one time, just jokingly, he said, I hope they're wailing and crying and falling over my coffin, because he said, I want to make sure they remember me when I die. So, and he said that in jest, you know. But again, it's all how we look at it and how we want to celebrate life. So. Somebody else had there? Sure. Sure. As Edna's patting her. This is her sister, by the way, if you didn't know. Okay. Give me my room. Sure. And he never would let me let us get a queen size bed. And as you get older, you get bigger. Sure. Sure.
And what I got me two pillows now, you were one. I got two pillows. Two big pillows like this. Here's the body, but I ain't gonna wear it.
Yes, ma'am. Sure, that's where the normal guilt comes. Sure, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else? Yes, ma'am. It's okay. Take your time. Sometimes, you know, like I said, in guilt, many times we don't approach it. You know, it's the elephant in the room because we don't know how to talk about it, and we don't want to talk about it. And then sometimes when we understand it better, I think many times we make grief complicated when it doesn't have to be, but we don't do it intentionally. You know, we complicate the stages by putting things in front of us to not move to the next phase because, okay, I've gotten comfortable in this stage now. I'm going to stay right here. You know, I don't feel as bad, but I'm not great, but I'm not crying as much as I used to, and this corner of the house is comfortable, and I'm not going to move past that, so here's the barrier. But when we understand that I can move past the barrier, and the next phase is going to even be better, and it'll help me move forward, sometimes when we recognize those stages, and like you said, Miss Edna, understanding the guilt sometimes and knowing that, hey, I can get through that, it helps us to better face those things too. And sometimes, like, you know, Ozzy again made that great point. I didn't even know I was grieving. You know, until it was there in my face, and now, you know, maybe some of those things did affect me of who I am now and how I've handled things in the past. So, you know, God gives us grief for a reason. It's there, and though we sometimes see it as a curse, it's really a blessing in disguise, because God is helping us to process through our emotions so we can continue to move and live and to serve Him. And sometimes, though, like I said, it's not always an easy thing. Anybody else? Anybody else want to share anything? Yes, ma'am. Something triggered it, but at that moment, more than likely, it was just this stage of shock that you were in. You were just kind of stuck and numb and trying to process. And then, you know, again, you know, in talking about, you know, the questions, just to kind of give you some etiquette and things to say and things not to say, one of the first things, let me talk about this real quickly because I want to get you guys out of here, but is concerning the funeral home. You know, and being a gospel preacher, I've attended my share of funerals, conducted my share of funerals, and stood with families, and all of the things I'm saying to you, I've done, okay? So don't think I'm pointing the finger at you, because this has come from experience and how people have reacted and things I've learned along the way. But, you know, many times it's uncomfortable us to begin with to go to the funeral home, because we understand that it's sad, it's, man, this is not going to be a good time, and, you know, we're going to have to stand in line, and all of these other things that kind of come with this, especially if the person is well known, and, you know, what do I say to the person? You simply being there says volumes. But also understand, too, more than likely they're not going to remember that you were there to begin with. If there's a long line, I've been to funerals where the line was 3 hours long, and standing there with folks going through and greeting them, they're not going to remember a single person. Yeah, exactly. Generally, he makes a great point, you know, that sign-in book, you know, many times that's for them to go back and look, and you'll get a thank you card, and I've had people tell me, I don't even remember them being there. But again, that helps them to remember. I always encourage people to sign that book too, you know, because that means a lot to them, because they want to recognize you for remembering them in their time of trials. They do, you know, and people are very conscious of your feelings too, of what they're going through. The next thing, as you kind of go through the line and as you're talking to the person, this is not the time to go through, you know, the stroll down memory lane. It's not. We want to do that. We want to say we loved him or we loved her and she was such a wonderful lady and, you know, I was so blessed to know him. And I remember this one time, Brother Joe, boy, you remember that he did that, you know? They're not going to remember that conversation either. The best thing to do is hug them around their neck, tell them you love them, and tell them you're praying for them, and then move on. Because remember, as you're standing there with your story of this lady who's now had to stand in this line for 3 hours, okay, with her family, as you're telling this story, you're not the only one doing that. So they're standing in that line absolutely exhausted up until this point because of the range of emotions, the state of shock they're going through of trying to plan a funeral and get family in and doing all of these things. The last thing we want to do is tax them anymore. So the best thing for us to do is just say, I love you, and I'm praying for you, and I'll be here if you need me, and move on. And believe me, that says volumes, because like I said, a lot of times they're not going to remember those things. And then if you can, go to the funeral. I know sometimes, you know, down in the South, many times, and this is changing a little bit with culture, you know, you'll have a viewing the first night, you know, it'll be from 6 to 8 o'clock, and then the next day is the funeral at 11. And I know sometimes we work. People tend to remember the funeral, you being there for the funeral, more than they do for the wake or the visitation. Because they're seeing so many people, but in that moment, they see you sitting there remembering their loved one, and as they're going through that grieving period. And in that moment, too, you know, many times as I've done funerals, the family will go off into another room and they're going to accept visitors. And that's a good time to then be able to go talk with the person one-on-one, to sit down and talk to them. But, you know, some of the things never to say, you know, certainly, and I'm going to, a poem that I shared with you, I'll read, and I think that's the best poem I've ever come across, called Please, to give to people, to help them understand how to talk to people. You know, don't say, well, the Lord has him now, you know, or the Lord needed him more. You know, things like that that we say. I heard a lady say one time, well, you know, the Lord really needed him, and she said, well, what about me? I needed him more than the Lord did. You know, sometimes in our moments of trying to be nice and you know, loving and comforting, we really say the dumbest things. And I preface that obviously with a little humor, because we're just trying to be good people. But the best thing to say in those moments is nothing in the initial stages. When somebody needs you the most is when the funeral's over, the flowers are gone, the grave is dug, the body is laid to rest, or whatever the case is, if it's a cremation. Go over to their house about a week later and you sit with them and let them talk and let them cry and let them grieve or whatever else they might be going through, because that's when they need you the most. A lot of people think it's the funeral and I need to be there for the funeral. And yes, we should. But we forget the moment after, when everybody's gone, when all the family's gone home and the grandkids have flown back and the kids are gone, and now they're in that house all by themselves. That's when all of those emotions come flooding in, when the nights seem like they're never going to end, and they're all alone. That's when we need to go see them the most. I always try my best to make sure that somebody who's lost somebody that's really close, to try and at least go sit with them a week or two later, to talk with them, and, you know, just saying, hey, are you okay? And if you can't go visit, call them. Hey, are you doing okay? Just checking on you, you know, was thinking about you. Don't have to elaborate and go into a long, lengthy conversation. Just say, is everything okay? You know, can you know, you want somebody to talk to? Simple gestures like that go a long, long way. Obviously, you know, there are some things we don't want to say. But again, that's the reason I gave you that poem I came across. I don't know who wrote this. I don't even remember where I got it. I think somebody might have gave it to me in a class or... But I think it expresses a lot of the things that people are feeling as they're going through the grieving process when they've just lost a loved one. Please don't ask me if I'm over it. You know, you made the point that you said 10 years later they were concerned that you should be over it by now. You never get over it. I'm never going to be over him. I'm never going to be over her. You know, this was the one I was married to for 61 years. You know, he was the one I loved that I cherished. So, no, I'm not going to be over it. And nor should I feel guilty about not being over it. Please don't tell me that they're in a better place, because he's not here with me. You know, it's better if they were here with me, because then I get to be with them. Is that us being selfish in our human nature? Absolutely it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. We're very selfish when it comes to the ones that we love. Please don't tell me he isn't suffering. I haven't come to terms with why he had to suffer to begin with. You know, we never want to see a loved one go through any, you know, pain or agony or trials or a, you know, drawn-out illness, because we've seen, you know, all the things that they've gone through and had to deal with. But, you know, don't tell me that he's not suffering, because I didn't want him to suffer to begin with. And I know sometimes we say that, oh, well, they're in a better place now and they're not suffering and going through this. I've said it, you said it. But really, that's not what they want to hear. You know, please don't ask me if I feel better. Like I said, grief isn't something that goes away, because it's not going to clear up overnight. It might take you 10 or 20 years to go through your different stages and process it and go back to a different stage, because you never dealt with that to begin with. Please don't tell me at least you had him for so many years. What year would you choose for your loved one to die? You know, we say, I've been married to him for so many years. Well, you know, you had a really good long marriage. Why couldn't I have had two more? You know, these are the questions we ask ourselves. Why did it have to stop now? Please don't ever tell me that God doesn't give us more than we can handle. We say that a lot of times, don't we? And we say it because we're trying to comfort them. You know, God's not putting a lot on you, and He's not going to give you more than you can handle. When you're going through a tremendous amount of grief, that's all you want to handle. And as a matter of fact, as you're experiencing that grief, you don't even want to handle that. You don't want that grief. You don't want that pain. You didn't ask for it. And I think sometimes when we say that kind of in passing and in jest, I mean, we understand how great and loving our God is and that He takes care of us. But in this moment of grief, I don't want any of this. I didn't ask for this. So why am I having to experience this? Please just say you're sorry. That's all I want to hear. I'm sorry you're hurting. Sorry you're having to go through this. That's all we need to hear. Please just say that you remember Him. Talk about Him. Boy, what a wonderful, wonderful man that he was. Or, boy, she was a great cook. Man, she could make some biscuits. You know, those are the things. You know, just say you remember Him. Because I remember Him. I remember her. Please just talk to me about it. Tell me what you remember about Him. So I can tell you why I loved Him or why I loved her or why she meant so much to me. Please just mention His name. And please just let me cry. That's the best thing that you can do for grief is to cry. Because with that, all of that pain, all of that agony, all of that heartache comes pouring out. And through tears, God is allowing you to heal. God gave us tear ducts for a reason. Don't feel guilty about using them, no matter when it might be. I remember I saw a lady one time when I was in Fayette, Alabama, and she was at the gas station, and she was pumping gas on the other side of where I was, and all of a sudden she just starts crying uncontrollably. Just like broke down. She was probably in her late 50s, early 60s. Just, I had no idea who she was. So I got back, and Miss Linda, I have to mention, I just saw this lady that was just boohooing like crazy, and I kind of made, you know, in jest about it. And she said, "What did she look like?" And I told her, "Well, she just lost her son. She lost her son about 2 months ago." I felt about that big. I didn't know why she was crying. But in that moment, at that place, at that gas station, is where she needed to vent her tears. You know, and you know, how dare I make jest of that, because that's what she needed at that moment. So again, we can't judge other people when they're crying or when they're shedding tears or when they're struggling. We don't know their grief. We don't understand their pain. But in that, they need that moment. And all you got to do is put your arm around them, tell them you're sorry and you love them. That goes a long, long way. Does anybody else have any other questions or comments? Yes, ma'am. Yeah, and you know, this is one of those things, I leave it to scruples, okay? I've known a lot of faithful people that have been cremated. My parents want to be cremated. That's in their, you know, their last will and testament. Miss Linda, wonderful Christian lady, wanted to be cremated because she didn't want anybody to see her that way. A lot of times we try and limit God's power because we say, well, you know, the Bible talks about in 1 Thessalonians when the dead in Christ are going to rise, but doesn't the Bible also talk about the new bodies that God is going to give us? And it also talks about that God created us from dust, right? And we're going to return as dust too. So, you know, a lot of times people want to say, well, that's not scriptural. Show me in the Bible where it's not. And I know it's hard, but at the same time, it's an extremely thing, you know, difficult thing to grasp sometimes because we're used to traditions and the way things have always been. You know, until I began preaching, I'd never been to, you know, done a funeral for somebody that was cremated. But my grandfather was cremated, you know, and they didn't have his memorial service for like 3 years. to get, or a couple of years to get all the family together to where they can do that. Sometimes people choose to do that because of how their family spread out and things like that. It's just more feasible. Sometimes people do it because they can't afford a regular funeral. You know, your average funeral cost is anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000. But some people just say, no, I'm not going to do that because I don't think that's right, and this is how I want it to be, and I respect that, and certainly that's their prerogative, and I don't liken that as any less. And if that's what they want to do, we'll make sure that we respect that and that happens. So, Sure. Sure. You know, the whole tradition of the idea with the open casket is to give us closure. You know, that's kind of where that whole premise came from, because some people think they need to see the body for closure. Some people don't want to see it. I remember, you know, to go back to Miss Linda's funeral, of why she wanted to be cremated, because she didn't want anybody to see her. She wanted everybody to remember her of how they always knew Miss Linda. You know, she was the smiling, the bubbly, you know, the happy person that she was. That's how she wanted people to remember. I don't want people to remember me as this old sick lady in a coffin. So she said, remember me how I was. And that's why we had pictures of how she was at her funeral. And, But sometimes it's closure for people, you know. And I've done funerals too that they had a casket there, but they didn't want it open. They didn't want anybody to see them because they didn't want people to see them that way. So again, I think it goes back to preference. But would I say it's a sin? No, I wouldn't. But again, sometimes people struggle with it. And I say, if it bothers you, then don't do it. You know, again, it goes back to the scruple. Okay. Yeah, I think I appreciate you bringing that up because of the time and times that we live into. You know, I told you I don't do Facebook, but it's not our place to put other people's business on Facebook. Praying for such and such family. How do you know that their child hasn't been called yet and told their father's passed away? And now they see it and find it out on Facebook. Best thing for us to do during those times, stay off Facebook. If the family wants to post something to Facebook, that's their prerogative. That's not our prerogative. You know, but sometimes I know we mean well because we're trying to inform, but sometimes in the process we hurt people more than we're helping. So I always tell people, just, you know, stay off Facebook. That's not your place to announce it. You know, let the family do that. If they want to, fine. If not, you know, certainly don't do that. You know, if you want to say it a week or two later, I wouldn't have an issue with that, certainly, you know. But I would say leave it alone altogether. Because I've seen some people, I've heard of people finding out their father died that way. You know, so that's not a way you want to find out that a loved one's passed away. Anybody else? Yeah, certainly. You know, obviously we never want to say, well, you can have another one, or you're young, or when are you going to have another one again? You know, those are things we never want to say. And sometimes, too, I don't always say, you know, like what she did was definitely, you know, wrong, because sometimes people, they don't know what to say. You know, and sometimes I would rather somebody not say anything than say something and put their foot in their mouth to make the situation worse or make you feel bad, you know. And but you said she sent a letter to help. Right, the nurse, the one that walked away, right, yeah. Because I said sometimes the best thing for us to say if we don't know what to say is nothing. Simple hug and I love you is, it goes a long, long way. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, again, you know, I think that goes, you know, what Ken said as well is sometimes laughter helps the healing, you know, and it lightens the mood, you know, in that process. I tell people, because I've seen people take it to the extreme, and, you know, I was at one particular funeral where the funeral director had to come up and tell the lady to move on because she stood there for 20 minutes talking to this lady, and she didn't want to be rude and tell her to move on because, you know, what she was going through, and nobody else really knew what to do. And finally he had to say, look, you know, there's 300 people standing in line here. But I think in quick moments I've said, you know, well, I sure remember the kind of character that he was, and, you know, pass on type thing. It has to be, and obviously with good taste, and sometimes we just have to use common sense, you know, in those situations. But I'm sure, you know, those things help. And again, it goes back to remembering them. We love them. We want people to remember them. We care about them. So, but I certainly hope this has, you know, helped you today. Thank you very much for your comments and opening up and giving your personal stories and your account. That is tremendously helpful, I think, in situations and in seminars like this, that you can express those things and know that those that are sitting around you have experienced those things as well. And I hope that it's helped you to heal, and even if it's just in a small way, and helps you to look back and to grasp something and to help you move forward. But I also want to offer my assistance to you if you ever need to talk to me. If you ever need any help or counseling, please know that my door is always open, and I'm always more than willing to sit and listen to anything that you have to say. And again, thank you for being here. Any last comments before I offer a word of prayer? All right, let's have a word of prayer and we'll be dismissed. Our Father who art in heaven, we are thankful unto Thee for this day and for the privilege that is ours to gather here. And Father, that we ask that You help our hearts, help our souls, enrich us, Father, in Your love, and help us to heal. Father, help us as we go forward from this place, as we go back into the world that is sometimes difficult for us to traverse and to walk through, to help us to be strong. Help us to go through these different stages of grief in such a way that we can to grow as Your children, to be stronger in faith, and certainly that we can grow closer to You. Father, help us to never forget those that we love. Help us to remember them and to remember the good times, to remember the examples that they left for us, and how they watched over us, how they took care of us, and how they loved us. Father, thank You for precious memories. Thank You for life. Thank You for loving us. But most of all, we thank You for Jesus. In His name we do pray. Amen.